who will be the Democrats' next anointed candidate. We'll talk about that and some related issues next on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. And you may have noticed that you got a rerun last week. If you're listening in on WLRY, yes, I did do a rerun last week. And there's a reason for that. I was out of town. I was visiting with my sister and my cousins in Louisville, Kentucky, if you learn how to. I saw something I should have picked up. I saw a little sign that says it's Louisville, and you should sound like you've been drinking bourbon when you say it. And I kind of laughed at that because, you know, Louisville is a big bourbon distillation center. So a little bit of local color there. My cousins came down to Louisville because my male cousin lives in Sweden. He was born in New York City, raised in New York City, but he went to Sweden for a job and stayed there and got married. Well, he and his wife adopted a boy from the Marshall Islands, which used to be a U.S. trust territory. I won't go into, you can look up the history of that. After World War II, we did atomic testing there, much to our detriment, I think, and people were forced off islands. Bikini Atoll, everybody's heard of Bikini Atoll because, you know, the bikini bathing suit was named after the testing. You can look up that up. But nonetheless, they adopted a boy from the Marshall Islands, and he has siblings, and the siblings all went to different families. They were all adopted out. And so my cousin's son, who would be my second cousin, we've discussed this over and over and over. Or is it, never mind. I won't go into that. My mom could tell you right off the top of her head. I think it's a first cousin once removed. Nonetheless, he comes up to visit with his brother, who's in Cincinnati. Well, my sister's in Louisville, and we get together with them occasionally. He comes over about once a year, so we all get together. His sister, my other cousin, lives, she and her husband are back and forth between Arizona and Texas. So we don't get together very often, and we are, you know, advancing in age, and therefore we get together when we can. So I was down there for the 4th of July, something I haven't done in years because since we've moved out to the country in 2016, we've been hosting an annual fireworks display, 4th of July celebration. And actually, it's my children's, my middle daughter's family who has this thing. And we have it out here because we're out in the country and people don't get so mad when you have thunder boomers on the 4th. And in fact, you just tell your neighbors, hey, come on over here, we're having a party where you're invited, come on over and watch the fireworks and you know, watch the kids do their things. Well, the problem is that the kids, my kids, are now having kids, and as those of us who are parents know, things get exponentially more difficult when you have little kids, and there are lots and lots of little kids. So this all-night partying, mixing up drinks and doing silly things before and after the fireworks, that's kind of had to come to a stop. Why? Because the kids have responsibilities with little children. And, you know, they have to be put to bed, and you let them stay up a little late, but, you know, and we have enough bedrooms around here, but the bad part is that we would have multiple family members and we would have to put them up, which was no burden for us. We thought it was fun. We enjoyed it. But the little kids have thrown a slight monkey wrench into the works, and that's fine. We expected that to happen because Jenny and I remember our youth and remember what having children does. It basically, it ropes you into responsibility, and you may not have been prepared for it when it happened, but you are certainly in the middle of it, and you have an obligation to your children to do the right thing and not put them in harm's way. And that's what's going on. So who knows? We may pick that back up. As I've always have fun at that thing. And even just being the host, all we did was host, and we would provide places where we could bring food. Everybody brought food, and everybody brought things to not just alcohol, but they would bring soft drinks, and we have a refrigerator and extra refrigerator for that kind of thing. And basically, we had a good time. So in Cincinnati, we did the same thing. Now, we did go down to what they call the Riverfront Fireworks Display. It had been raining on and off all day on the 4th, and they did do their fireworks display on the 4th in true rare fashion. A lot of places around here, I went to a display in Heath that was on the 2nd. Not sure why. I think they were not wanting to compete with Red, White, and Boom in Columbus. So they did theirs on the 2nd, which was a very good fireworks display. We sat out in the mall in Heath in the across the street from the mall parking lot in the Kroger parking lot. Well, actually, we were in the, I think, First Federal parking lot because we knew somebody who worked there. And we watched fireworks go off from Geller Park there, if you're familiar with Heath at all. And it was a good show. Actually, it was a better show than we saw in Louisville. Because that fireworks display went on for 20 or 25 minutes, and it was nice, and lots of big boomers, and lots of color, and lots of interesting, attempts at... they got a smiley face in the air. I'm not sure how they did that. But down in Louisville, I jokingly called it the 14-minute firework extravaganza. I mean, you know, 14 minutes, most fireworks displays are really just getting started. No, they hit 14-minute mark, they go into the finale, and I'm like, what was that? And my brother-in-law says, yeah, we're going to have a good time. We're going to go down to the riverfront. We're going to watch fireworks. You know, spend all the time, the effort necessary to go down there and find parking and walk in. And he says, well, that was a disappointment. And he apologized. And I go, well, it's not your fault. You're not on the planning commission. So my fireworks experience wasn't so hot. But we did other things. We went out to dinner at a Cuban restaurant, which was wonderful. And we visited and had reminisced and got asked about things and people. And we asked them about things and people and just caught up. So I'm hoping you had a wonderful 4th as well. I'm sure many of you did in the Lancaster, Zanesville, just the areas that WLRY covers. And those who hear our podcast, I'm sure you all had a wonderful time, watched fireworks, and just had a great time with your families and such. Well, that's not really the subject today. The subject today, I'm going to talk about some of, if you recall, my show on the at the end of June. It would have been the show for the 29th of June. And the reason I'm revisiting that is, I just want you to know, if you go back and listen to that show, www.principledpolicy.com, that's principledpolicy.com, I talked about who I thought the candidate, what I thought was going to be the outcome. And I, before I recorded that, because I recorded it on the Friday morning after the Thursday debate, and I got up without looking at anything, and recorded that and gave you my thoughts about what I thought was going to happen. Because everybody here on this show that's listening right now, that watched recordings of it or watched it live or have watched pieces of it, knows that the President of the United States basically proved that he was not competent to remain in office. I had to laugh because within 24 hours, now later I went by and read other analysis of his performance at the debate and after, things that have been done after, and in retrospect, things that were going on before. And virtually everybody agrees that was a bad performance. I mean, it was ultimately. Now, we've been watching this president of the United States have bad performances since he took the office. But because we saw it in short snippets, it didn't ring home as much for some of us as for others. And if this was an awakening for you, then, well, I'm sorry. But this has been going on since he was elected. And before, some of it we noticed when he was vice president. He has been slipping for quite some time. Remember, he was Barack Obama's vice president. And there's a reason why Joe Biden was encouraged and led into doing what they called the basement campaign. And just what is the basement campaign? In some places, if you do a search, I don't encourage people to use Google. I'd say use DuckDuckGo, but whatever search engine you feel comfortable with. And no, I have no sponsorship agreement with DuckDuckGo. I just don't like using spy platforms. But do a search on basement strategy. Basement campaigns will get you there, but basement strategy is the term that you will come up with. And you will begin to see things about Joe Biden's, especially 2020 basement strategy. Now, what did the basement strategy consist of? It consisted of, one, limited public appearances. They don't do so much public campaigning. They let spokesmen do it. They let other surrogates do their campaigning. They avoid debates, town halls, and other events where they might be challenged or scrutinized. This worked for Biden in 2020 because the media allowed it to work. Okay? Now, it's interesting that Joe Biden, who's further along, frankly, in what I believe to be his dementia than he was in 2020, obviously, since it's a progressive thing. Joe Biden and he's the one who challenged Trump to that debate in June. By the way, the earliest debate, pretty close to ever, that between the two anointed candidates, if you will, I use that term. You know where that term comes from. It's a biblical phraseology, and we'll get back to that. But it's the earliest campaign between the two presumptive nominees that's ever happened. Now, why was it that early? Well, Biden insisted. Not sure why, but at the behest of his advisors, and frankly, he did not acquit himself well, and it showed why the basement strategy was a thing in 2020. Because in his subsequent appearances, in some of them he's been all right, and in others he's shown that he just really doesn't have it anymore and hasn't had for quite some time. Okay, number two is a behind-the-scenes approach to the campaign. Instead of being in the public eye, candidates using this strategy focus on building relationships with key stakeholders, such as donors, party officials, and interest groups. Who do those interest groups include? It includes a sycophantic press. It includes people like George Clooney, who is a major bundling fundraiser for the Democratic Party, who has now come out and said he wants Biden to step aside because he cannot see how Biden can win the election. I do. They could cheat like they did in 2020. And yes, I say that openly and tell you that I believe that's what happened in 2020. I've explained that before. Go back through my archives and I'll tell you why you didn't have to steal a whole state. You only had to steal certain very key electoral districts, and voila, because we have winner take all in 48 states. Winner took all in 48 states. And I've explained why that's a bad plan. Okay. Party officials, look, if you are the nominee, you've got the party officials anyway, because they have no place else to go, although we'll talk about that as well, what's going on with Biden's attempt to stay in the race. Donors. And I just mentioned George Clooney. When the donors pull out, which is what's happening currently in the to the Biden campaign, Biden's performance at the debate and subsequently has cost a lot of money to the campaign. I'm not sure what they're going to do about that, except to say, well, what I said before, that Joe Biden will not be the nominee. I think the nominee is going to be Michelle Obama, because she won't have any trouble raising money at all. Kamala Harris will get broomed aside, and the only person that can broom her aside is Michelle Obama. That's it. Nobody else could do it. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, can't get that done. Some people fear him, so he'll revitalize the party, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not so sure. Not so sure. In any case, step three of the basement strategy is social media and online presence. To maintain a presence, candidates may rely on social media and online platforms to connect with voters, share their message, and build a digital campaign. Yeah. I mean, if you are anything of a user of YouTube or any other Twitter or any of the social media, you will have seen Joe Biden speaking out, trying to raise funds in advertising. People will have campaign operatives on their podcasts. People will talk about the campaign from their podcasts and from their YouTube videos. And you'll see things like we see MSNBC, the Young Turks, CNBC. You'll see them run snippets, clippings from their show. Morning Joe, who was an in the tank partisan. I always love it when people say former conservative Joe Scarborough. Scarborough was never a conservative. He was never anything but a liberal Republican. He was always what we call a rhino Republican in name only. And he basically lost his job because his district went more conservative. So that being the case, you'll see guys like that. You'll see a lot of stuff. I was a confirmed Republican conservative, and then I really I couldn't possibly go with the likes of Donald Trump. Okay, who did they like? They liked the John Kasichs. They liked the Chris Christies. They liked the Bushes. They liked Nikki Haley. They liked all these rhinos, and I'll be right up front with you. These people are not conservatives. And neither is this person who says, well, I was a confirmed conservative Republican. The news media does this too, confirmed conservative Republican. No. These people are not conservatives. They're rhinos. They're socialists. They are people who really don't grasp it. But that's what you'll see, social media and online presence. You can get Joe Biden on in an interview that lasts 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and he might be okay. It's when you get extended media presence that he falls apart. Now, why do you not see more about Kamala Harris? Because Kamala Harris has the unique ability to go out in public and alienate everybody. Not just foes, but friends. How does she do that? She's arrogant and she's insulting. She acts like everybody is an 8-year-old and that she has to read them a story. There is a clip where she talks about some astronauts. And she's talking to a room full of adults. And it's like she's reading this storybook. And people start giving her a rough time. And she does what she does best. She cackles. When things get rough for her, and she's asked a question she can't deal with, she cackles. And then she comes up with one of the most ridiculous statements that you can imagine. So this is why you don't see Kamala out campaigning more. She's a terrible campaigner. Now, I'll give her the fact that she reached the Senate in California, but that doesn't take all that much. She was senator from California, the junior senator from California from 2017 to 2021. So 4 years, she didn't even complete a 6-year Senate term. She's a freshman senator who got picked for vice president. Why did she get picked for vice president? I think that's obvious. She's reliably far left liberal. She's, of the right skin tone. She was picked partly because of her race. There's no doubt about that. Now, why do I say it's no big deal for Kamala Harris to have been elected vice president from California? Look, it's a liberal enclave. She took over from Barbara Boxer, who was an ultra-liberal. She beat Loretta Sanchez for the office, who was a liberal. You cannot get elected conservative except from to Congress from districts more internal. Some of the Central California districts are, and some of the Northern California districts are quite conservative. But mostly, overwhelmingly on statewide offices, they're from far left politicians, far left Democrats. There hasn't been a Democratic or a Republican governor since Arnold Schwarzenegger, and there's some real question about whether he was really a Republican. I'll be quite honest. I still remember Hugh Hewitt coming on the radio really saying this. I'm laughing about this. I'm still waiting for this to happen. He goes, "You're going to love Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor of California." Turns out, yeah, I'm still waiting for, maybe he's going to have another term where I'm going to love Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor of California. I don't think it's going to happen. Okay, so Kamala got elected to the Senate from California, and look, her background is terrible. She was DA of San Francisco and then became the state attorney general, and from which place that she makes a big deal about the fact that she's, you know, okay with marijuana legalization, but she wasn't okay with it while she was DA in California. She crushed people and put them in prison and threw away the key. She managed to get that done as the state attorney general. And she was a gun confiscator, cooking up cockamamie schemes to take away California gun owners' guns. So she's anti-gun. She's not afraid to use the public office to advance her political career, which she did with her job as the attorney general. She really used a lot of her power to maintain her power, and that's not unheard of by any stretch of the imagination. Look, we see that happening Right now, one of the first things, these indictments of Trump's, the people around Trump, are just that. They are attempts to embarrass Trump. This is not a new strategy. And James Carville has come out and said this is a terrible strategy. Well, guess what? He was part of a group that wanted to get Benjamin Netanyahu in a previous stint as the Israeli prime minister, wanted to get him out of office in favor of liberals. Yes, they have such. In fact, really, Israel's a very liberal place. Netanyahu is a conservative by comparison. But we won't go into that. James Carville went over as, remember, he was the Clinton, one of the guys, the strategist behind getting Bill Clinton elected. So he goes over to Israel and takes his whole machine over there to, I think it was Peres who he got elected. And what did they do right after? Peres tried to embarrass Netanyahu and got him indicted on all these trumped up charges so they could get a conviction so that they could embarrass him with that if he wanted to come back into public office, which is exactly what they've done here. You've all heard the cry. And again, this is on social media. We're talking about these media appearances. Well, he's a convicted felon on Trump. Well, how much longer? Because these convictions are about to get chucked. They're about to be tossed out. Why? Because that presidential immunity ruling, which everybody knew was there. Look, this is nothing new. Presidential immunity is not a new thing. Richard Nixon was given partial immunity. These immunity arguments go back to George Washington. The president has a certain amount of immunity in the things that he does while he's in office. And quite honest, we all know that, for instance, Bill Clinton paid hush money to women he'd had affairs with, women he is alleged to have raped, women he had contact with, and nobody suddenly, he did use campaign funds, which apparently Donald Trump did not. If Donald Trump actually paid the we have to take the word of a convicted perjurer, and that is his former fixer Cohen. There's some grave doubt about that. Now his accuser Stephanie Clifford, also known as Stormy Daniels, basically sued him and lost. We knew something was funky on this, this lawsuit from this woman who alleged that, Donald Trump had sexually assaulted her in a department store. The story is so cockamamie and the details are so lacking that the lawsuit in which she was awarded some huge amount of money, is so absurd, but the people in New York, sad to say, are easily manipulated, just like in California, easily manipulated over dislike of Donald Trump. Now, there are people that I dislike, but if false charges are brought and the proof is really lame, I'm not going to vote to convict. I've served on jury duty. I would not convict on such lame evidence. But some will. Why? Because they're open and clear hatred. And that's why Donald Trump left New York and moved his whole operation to Florida. Because he was so deeply hated there. Why was he deeply hated there? Well, because he has money. That's part of it. And Donald Trump has not always been a rock-ribbed conservative, and I don't think he is now. He's a populist. Okay, I've gone off on a tangent, and I don't. So the last thing we talked about was social media and online presence. Look, both sides do this. The difference is that in the current state, the Republicans are willing to do head-to-head battles. And in fact, Trump has said, hey, let's do another debate, because he knows that strategy worked for him. It worked very well for him. He looked measured and he looked self-controlled, something he isn't necessarily noted for. But the social media and online presence. The fourth thing is avoidance of tough questions. Trump can't avoid tough questions. If he appears on any form of network television, they ask him gotcha questions the whole time. Now, his answers are very often, that's the one of the worst questions I've ever heard. But he does his best to answer those questions, because he knows he's being asked what they call a complex question. What's a complex question? A complex question in logical fallacy detection and in knowing when you're being gaslit or gaslighted, as we talked about in the three shows on gaslighting. What that means is you're being asked, when did you stop beating your wife? There's no way to properly answer that question. If you think about it, well, I haven't, is if you've never beaten your wife and you say, well, I haven't, because you're not allowed to go on. They'll interrupt you. No, you say, I haven't because I never started beating my wife. Or the only other answer is, you can say, well, I'm not answering that question. Well, what does that do? That leaves doubt open as to whether you still beat your wife or not. The assumption of the answer is in the question. You're not being asked in a question which you can answer. You're being asked a question which assumes that you're doing something when you're asked it. The answer is assumed in the question. Okay? That's a complex question. And believe me, the news media is doing nothing, or was doing nothing, except throwing Biden softballs. You watch any interview, he's being thrown really softballs. And what do I mean by that? It's baseball. You got a guy low and slow. What do you know, what can you do with it? If low and slow, you can hit it, man. You can hit her out of the park if you've got the right swing. And Joe Biden is given every opportunity to appear competent, has been since 2015. And when he was a vice president, look, the press is always going to go easy on the left. Right now, the press is working, and we'll get into this. Hopefully, I'll have enough time. But avoidance of tough questions. By limiting public appearances, as we talked about in the step one, candidates can avoid being asked tough questions or facing scrutiny from the media or opponents. You'll notice that Donald Trump is not doing that, except insofar as he's been stuck in a trial defending himself from bogus charges. And yes, I'll say that right up front, bogus charges. No, with a gag order from a judge, knowing full well that what the judge has done, and he did it on purpose, was not allow Donald Trump to talk about the fact that his charges are bogus and why. And so a different kind of this part of the strategy, avoidance of tough questions. Trump hasn't been offline and avoiding tough questions. He's been forced offline and forced to avoid tough questions because he's not allowed to answer them as part of a gag order, which has been partially lifted. It needs to be totally lifted, and we'll see what happens with that. And basement strategy, I'll be quite honest, another person who did it was Katie Hobbs in the 2022 Arizona gubernatorial election, if you remember that one. Katie Hobbs versus Lake. Katie Hobbs won that election under extremely questionable. Remember, the same strategy got used in 20 against Trump. Lots of lots of fake mail-in ballots, that kind of thing. Okay, again, I say fake. You say you don't have any proof of that, and I say the proof comes out, trickles out day by day by day by day, and nobody catches it because you're not watching closely enough. It's out there. We already found in Fulton County that thousands of ballots were counted twice. That kind of thing. Essentially, one of the analyses I've seen, the pros of a basement strategy: reduces the risk of gaffes or missteps, allows candidates to focus on building relationships with key stakeholders. And remember, we've talked about this. That's all well and good. Why stakeholders? Because they drag pockets of voters with them. Those stakeholders are people, you could say influencers, if you will, election influencers. They bring people along. Okay. It can be effective in reaching voters through social media and online platforms. Again, you're appealing to people who aren't necessarily thinking deeply about issues. They have issues that they are concerned with, but no one's seriously asking if the strategies that are being used are the correct ones, because they're avoiding the tough questions on their policy positions. Therefore, you can be effective by telling voters what they want to hear. In other words, tickling their ears, as the Bible says. And both sides do this, by the way. I'm not picking out the Democrats, but this is a specific thing that has been used by Democrats. The other Democrat that used it was John Fetterman, who was severely brain damaged, probably still is not completely right. Although, let me point something out. Joe Biden had two major aneurysms in the 80s. Two. And suffered severe brain bleeds and some brain damage. That may be working out to play. Everybody may have forgotten the fact that Joe had two aneurysms in his brain in the 80s. Which is probably the chickens are probably coming home to roost on that. The cons on a basement strategy are: it may be perceived as lacking transparency or accountability. Well, that is true. Here's why it works for Democratic candidates. They're already looking, the press is already looking to give them cover. They want to make sure that they will not necessarily face scrutiny for some of their policies. And therefore, it allows candidates to have those policies, have them not face tough questions because the press just doesn't ask them. But their opponents may perceive it as a lacking transparency or accountability, which is what has gone on with the Biden campaign again since at least 2019 and probably as early as 2017. Or 2015, Joe Biden has run that campaign. Now, he didn't prevail in the 2016 election. That was, of course, Hillary. But she basically sabotaged her own campaign. We won't go into that. Okay, cons, continue. Can lead to a lack of engagement with the public or the media. Again, that's exactly what they want to do in Joe's case. They want a lack of engagement with public or media, because when there isn't large exposure of Joe Biden to the public or the media that can't block, for instance, a live broadcast, the public sees what they see, and they don't like what they see. Why? Because the President of the United States is proving himself to be unfit for that office. Okay, the third con: may not be effective in building a strong personal connection with voters. voters are starting to fall away rapidly. As we've seen, Republican registrations are up. The polls are up. It looks like Trump may have a chance in lots of states that are normally blue. Why is that? Because people know that this man should not be the president of the United States. They would vote for Trump. Now, there are people like Whoopi Goldberg who has made stupid statements about she would vote for Biden if he had a bowel movement in his pants. Look, there are people out there who would do that. I've often said there are people in the Democratic Party who could get caught with compromising pictures of them with farm animals, and it wouldn't matter. People would continue to vote for them. And in fact, they would call that an expression of free expression of their sexuality. This is the kind of thing that is very dangerous to a place where people are, you know, one third of the people who watched the debate between Trump and Biden thought Biden won. Okay. Why did they think he won? Because he's the Democrat. He's their chosen candidate. It doesn't matter to them that he looked, frankly, completely incompetent. That's what you run into. Okay? So, may not be effective in building a strong personal connection with voters. That's what's happening right now. Because as people do see him in public, they're walking away from him. Okay, we got involved in this basement strategy thing because it's a strategy that proved to be effective for Biden and is now proving maybe he should have stuck with it, but he couldn't. So let's talk about what's really happening here. Okay, there are people who are trying to save the Joe Biden presidential campaign, but they're not going to be able to, and I think they know that they're not going to be able to. Right now, what you're seeing, if you look really closely, is the maneuvering behind the scenes for who's going to end up being the Democratic candidate, because it can't be Joe Biden. You may have heard the people say, well, we have to stick with Biden. He's our guy. We have to stick with him. He's beaten Donald Trump, and he's the only one who can continue to beat Donald Trump. That's not true, and that's why basically I've chosen Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama has the emotional cachet. She has the connection to the Obama presidency that liberals absolutely loved. And well, so does Joe, but again, Joe has proven himself incompetent to continue on as the candidate. And I mentioned that Kamala Harris is frankly not well liked at all. Her campaign negatives are very high nationwide. Sure, will it help them carry California? Yeah. Is California almost a lead pipe cinch guarantee? Yes, it was already in the bag for the Democratic ticket, no matter who it is. Who else could do that? And that would be the Governor Gavin Newsom, although Gavin Newsom has already been impeached. Now, they didn't get a conviction, but the fact is that Gavin Newsom was impeached. I need to clarify, he wasn't impeached. There was an attempt to recall him. Much the same way that Gray Davis was recalled and Arnold Schwarzenegger became the candidate, or not the candidate, but became the governor of California. He was replaced. Gray Davis was replaced with Arnold Schwarzenegger. They tried to do that again with Gavin Newsom, and let's just say he wasn't all that popular. But then again, folks, liberals are very forgiving, and Gavin Newsom, it's claimed, could revitalize the party. Yeah, maybe, I guess. He went to Florida to directly confront Ron DeSantis down there, who he said was stealing jobs from California. Well, you can't steal jobs. You can't steal companies from a state when they're leaving voluntarily to get away from crime, taxes, regulation, you name it. So he went down there and essentially got embarrassed. This was part of his presidential campaign strategy. He was going to go down there and make sure everybody got the message about why it was important to come on back to California. And everybody sort of thumbed their nose at him and said, yeah, well, you create a jobs and a good work environment, and we'll come back. Good work and tax environment, we'll come back. So it was an embarrassment for him, and that's kind of probably what would happen if he became the nominee in a presidential campaign. He would, in fact, embarrass himself if the media allows it. Remember, the media loves guys like Gavin Newsom. That, for instance, they don't care so much for Kamala Harris. Why? She's unlikable. It's very difficult to do anything like make her likable. You know, you really can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. She's got a lot of just negativity around her, and you negative energy, and you can't do much about that. Okay, so we've got others maneuvering behind the scenes. Don't kid yourself. Look, that convention is coming up now. I'm going to give you a little bit of my paranoid conspiracy theory here. I think the convention is late. By the way, the organizers knew it was really late. They knew it was late for the candidate to appear on the ballot. And I think they've made a big deal about Ohio, good old Ohio. But I think there are six states that are past the deadline for having a candidate for president, having had the convention completely nominate officially the candidate for president. And that includes all the votes, you know, all the votes of the delegates. Well, maybe I can come back to that a little bit too. But the fact is that the Democrats had to come up with this strategy where they would write a letter saying, after an executive committee action, which, if you recall from my broadcast on the 29th, I said, yeah, the executive committee is going to have to do a lot of work, the party executive committee. Why? Because the delegates don't meet until way late in August, the third week in August. Why is it so late? Why? Normally, political conventions are done in July. Why is this convention so late? I think it was done on purpose. I also think that Biden was pushed into this early presidential debate on purpose, because people on the inside of the party know that their man cannot get it done. Their man is not going to be the guy who can get this done. Okay? So I think he was sabotaged from within, and I think what you're seeing, some of the backlash from those who want to keep him as the candidate, that backlash is from people who didn't get the strategy. And you'll hear some of them say things like, how could they allow him to do this? How could they allow this thing to go on? I think that the convention is late to give the party time to get somebody else up and running. You may have heard the plan one of the plans is that we want to do a mini primary. They actually want to have they wanted to set up a special election, and they can't do that. So what they're trying to do is set up online meetings where people would come in and express their support for a candidate. They would invite a specific set of candidates. Of course, it'll be Kamala Harris. It'll be Gavin Newsom. They may even invite Michelle Obama, but I think the strategy there is they invite some of the front runners. They'll invite Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan. Why? I don't know. She's not popular in her state, and she's not popular any place. They think that she's somehow the face of I don't know what. But there will be numerous governors and senators and who will be invited to come and sort of set up in front of these online get-togethers. And from there, a front runner will emerge. Or if it doesn't, what will they do? They'll go to Michelle Obama and say, "You're the savior of the party. You're the one who can unite us. We need you to be the person that comes in and saves." And they go to the convention and give them all these things. I will tell you that Michelle Obama will be the only candidate who will be acceptable to black delegates over and above Kamala Harris, because they're Harris supporters. They want to see Harris be the candidate. Okay? This is going to be an internal machination. I look for these things. Look for it really to ramp up in the next week. It wouldn't surprise me by our next show that this process has really ramped up. Why? Because it will be past the middle of July, and you've got a convention coming up in the third week of August. That means you're down to about 45 days. Something has to be done now. There are going to be large efforts to broom out Joe Biden between now and 2 weeks at most. You're going to see this ramp up. You've already seen calls starting to come from donors, from Congress people. You're going to see it from the Senate. You're going to see it from governor's offices. People who just say, "This man cannot be our standard bearer. He cannot be president of the United States, because it will be the end of our chance at having someone move into the White House." Now, will this strategy work? I don't know. I'll be quite honest. I think you're going to have to remove Joe Biden kicking and screaming, but that may not be a problem. If they can't get this done, what you will see is, and we explained this on the show after the debate, you will probably see soon people talking about the 25th Amendment. It's already out there rumbling a little bit. Just pay attention. But it wouldn't shock me to find the 25th Amendment being mentioned, and in fact, Republicans have called for it. That's not surprising. But they've called for the White House to start 25th Amendment procedures. But you know what? The 25th Amendment is beautiful because Congress can do it. If they can get the Senate to agree, and if you start hearing rumblings that the Congress and the Senate are going to set up a commission, a 25th Amendment commission, guess what, folks? It's over. It's over. They're going to use that as leverage to get Joe to step out. And as scary as this is nothing new. We see maneuvering go on all the time. I'm thinking, I'm going back to the Bible. 1 Kings chapter 1. David is an old man. Now, when you add up the ages and you read some commentaries, how old was David when he was a quote, advanced in years, old and advanced in years. He was 70. I'm 67 and a half. I don't like to think of myself as old and advanced in years. And in this day and age, 67 and a half and 70 are not particularly old. We don't think of people as old really until they hit their 80s, which Joe Biden is. And we have some very strange things going on. For instance, he can't get warm, so they cover him with blankets, and they go get him a very beautiful young girl to be in bed with him and keep him warm. And it says, but he knew her not, which is a euphemism for they did not have sex. And the first thing that came to my mind is the guy's got umpteen wives. Why don't they just get one of the wives to come over and sleep with him? Okay, that's a question that I'll probably go to my grave wondering about. I'm going to start looking at more commentaries about that. But his son, Adonijah, and we've seen this before because remember Absalom, but Adonijah sets himself up as king. Adonijah says in verse 5, I will be king. And he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. His father never at any time displeased him by asking, why have you done thus and so? He was also a very handsome man, and he is born next after Absalom. Okay, again, that little phrase in there, his father had never at any time displeased him by asking, why have you done thus and so? So in other words, David acted like a terrible father. In the same way he acted as a terrible father to Absalom, he acted as a terrible father to the son that raped his sister, Tamar. He was terrible to Tamar. Adonijah went to Joab. If you know Joab's place in this story. The bottom line is that Adonijah basically made a move on the king's job before the king was dead. Now, who had the king chosen to be his successor? He'd chosen Solomon, who eventually followed King David. Solomon. David was very clear to Solomon. Bathsheba came to him. I remember one of his great falls was Bathsheba, and yet he married her. David murdered one of his own mighty men, spoken of in Samuel. He murdered one of his own mighty men to get his wife. And we know this is a major problem. David seems to have had an eye for the ladies, and that may be this thing with the Abishag, the Shunammite, who was chosen to sleep with him. But the fact is that Bathsheba came to him and said, didn't you pick my son Solomon? And he said, yes. And he goes, well, you better do something about this, because David was no longer competent and could no longer see what was going on in the kingdom around him. He was past it. Everybody knew he was past it. Everybody knew that he was no longer competent, so they were looking to replace him before he was completely done with the office. Okay? So what did David do? David began to realize what the issue was when it was brought to his attention finally, and he came to his senses. He immediately anointed Solomon king and made it known that Solomon was to be the king, which completely pulled the rug out from under Adonijah. You're going to see some of this coming up. That there's nothing new under the sun, to quote another biblical passage, Jerry quote it. Nonetheless, there's nothing new under the sun. Look to the Bible to see what's going to happen, because you're going to see some of this maneuvering. You may not recognize it. It's not going to be exactly the same, but it's going to be the stuff that goes on. All right, you know what I think. I want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And my email address is chairman@principledpolicy.com. That's chairman@principledpolicy.com. You can get a hold of me. I would ask that you join me again next week for another Principles and Policies.